Part 2, Section 10. Abdu'l-Bahá, Father of the Poor. Lua wrote many letters to her friends in America. She told them all she could about the beautiful life of Abdu'l-Bahá. She described the many moving scenes by which she was surrounded in the Holy Land. She shared with them touching, heartwarming stories showing the special love which the people of Haifa and Acre had for the Master. Each of the pilgrims in Lua's party experienced days of delight and joy, days which much recall the zeal and ecstasy of those who first met Jesus the Christ. Each received confirmations and was fired with great eagerness to serve the cause of God. Each had his own story to tell. Perhaps we should see Abdu'l-Bahá through their eyes as well. The first member of the Negro race ever to embrace the Baha'i faith in America was in that first party of pilgrims in 1898. Robert Turner became a faithful believer all the days of his life. He was transported by the influence exerted by Abdu'l-Bahá in the course of that epoch-making pilgrimage. Nothing throughout his long life would ever again becloud the radiance or lessen the intensity of the emotions which the loving kindness showered by Abdu'l-Bahá upon him had excited in his breast. Mrs. Hurst, the friend who had been their hostess on the journey, declared those days to be the most memorable of her life. She described Abdu'l-Bahá as the most wonderful being I have ever met or ever expect to meet in this world. She alluded to the spiritual atmosphere that surrounds him and most powerfully affects all those who are blessed by being near him as something indescribable. May Maxwell, who was to become the mother teacher of Europe and to open France and Canada to the faith of Baha'u'llah, recorded for posterity her never-to-be-forgotten impressions of her first glimpse of Abdu'l-Bahá and her meeting with him. I can remember neither joy nor pain nor anything that I can name. I had been carried suddenly to too great a height. My soul had come in contact with the Divine Spirit, and this force so pure, so holy, so mighty had overwhelmed me. We could not remove our eyes from his glorious face. We heard all he said. We drank tea with him at his bidding, but existence seemed suspended. And when he arose and suddenly left us, we came back with a start to life. But never again, oh, never again, thank God, to the same life on this earth. Let us share a glimpse of Abdu'l-Bahá from the pen of one who was not a Baha'i, an American attorney. He also was a guest of Abdu'l-Bahá during those same years. His name was Myron H. Phelps. Mr. Phelps was so moved by Abdu'l-Bahá's Christ-like life that he set down in deathless language a picture of Abdu'l-Bahá, as Lua herself had seen him many times in the streets of the ancient city of Acre. He wrote an entire book about Abdu'l-Bahá. On one occasion, Phelps described a typical day in the life of Abdu'l-Bahá. Some day at this season, you may see the poor of Acre gathered at one of the shops where clothes are sold, receiving cloaks from the master. Upon many, especially the most infirmed or crippled, he himself places the garment, adjusts it, oh, approvingly, as if to say, "There, now you will do well." On feast days, he visits the poor in their homes. He chats with them, inquires into their health and comfort, mentions by name those who are absent, and leaves gifts for all. He himself eats but once a day, and then bread, olives, and cheese suffice him. His room is small and bare, with only a matting on the stone floor. His habit is to sleep upon this floor. Not long ago, a friend, thinking that this must be hard for a man of advancing years, presented him with a bed fitted with springs and mattress. So these stand in his room also, but are rarely used. "For how," he says, "can I bear to sleep in luxury when so many of the poor have not even shelter?" So he lies upon the floor and covers himself only with his cloak. He is the beloved of all the city, high and low, and how could it be otherwise? For to this man it is the law, as it was to Jesus of Nazareth, to do good to those who injure him. This master, Abdu'l-Bahá, is as simple as his soul is great. He claims nothing for himself, neither comfort nor honour nor repose. 3 or 4 hours of sleep suffice him. All the remainder of his time and all his strength are given to the succour of those who suffer, in spirit or in body. "I am," he says, "the servant of God." Such is Abbas Effendi, the master of Akka. May Maxwell described vividly the day Abdu'l-Bahá unexpectedly told them to prepare to go from Haifa to Akka. May was feeling ill. "On Tuesday night," May later wrote, "I told my spiritual mother, Lua, that the master evidently did not realize how ill and weak I was, or he would never have expected me to leave with the others on Wednesday morning. Oh, we of little faith." No wonder she smiled and shook her head, saying, "You will soon realize something of the power of Abdu'l-Bahá." And it was about dawn when I awoke, feeling myself stirred by a breeze. I cannot describe what followed, but through my soul was flowing an essence. A mighty, unseen force was penetrating all my being, expanding it with boundless life and love and happiness, lifting and enfolding me in its mighty strength and peace. Abdu'l-Bahá assured that first party of pilgrims would every soul, no matter how humble his station in life, win great victories for the cause of God. "We can all serve in the cause of God," Abdu'l-Bahá said, "no matter what our occupation is. No occupation can prevent the soul coming to God. Peter was a fisherman, yet he accomplished most wonderful things. But the heart must be turned always towards God, no matter what the work is. This is the important thing. And then the power of God will work in us. We are like a piece of iron in the midst of the fire, which becomes heated to such a degree that it partakes of the nature of the fire and gives out the same effect to all it touches. So is the soul that is always turned towards God and filled with the Spirit."